Hey, America. Start listening now. Wait. Where are Eric and Danny?
If you ever want to see Eric and Danny again,
you'll just have to wait 2 weeks. They're in New York right now.
Oh, all right. So I guess I'm stuck with you, Derek, then.
I guess so.
All right. Well, we'll still have fun. Play the music.
Music!
Welcome to 12 Points from America, Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, the continent where only half of our staff is currently on. All right. Well, anyway, I'm Samantha.
I'm Derek.
Yeah, Derek's here this week.
From the depths of the 12 Points from America tavern.
He's tunneled his way out. We gave him a spoon, made his way up to the surface, and now here he is.
Recording from one of our many microbreweries.
Oh, this IPA is lovely today, isn't it?
Nice bitterness to it.
So how you doing, Derek?
I'm doing all right. Got some big shoes to fill.
I know, and considering that they have 4 feet between the two of them, I mean, you got shoes on your hands right now, and what the hell's going on?
I know, it's really hard to take notes.
I know. Anyway, if you want to join in on our lunacy, or just let us know how you guys are doing, feel free to hit us up on social media. On Twitter or Facebook, you can find us at 12 points, it's 12 points USA, or you can email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And especially if you wanted to hit up Eric specifically on @EricIsTweeting, as he and Danny traipse through Europe, I believe as the time of recording, they are currently in Paris. They'll probably be heading to Brussels in the next couple of days, and then on to Amsterdam after that. So they're having their little grand tour and leaving us here in Minnesota to fend for ourselves.
Leaving us very sad with several pictures of the Eiffel Tower.
Yep.
Which apparently is visible from any window in Paris.
It seems like it. They are basically living in their own personal rom-com right now. It's it's kind of surreal. But we're still having fun here in Minnesota. It's all good.
As best we can.
I know.
Temperatures are dipping down into single digits. Celsius.
But soon. Soon. Anyway. Thanks so much for joining us this week. We are just going to hop into... Because we realized, like, Derek, you have been a part of this family for, well, now 17 episodes, give or take, but we really haven't had much of a chance for you to shine. So I figured we would have a moment to introduce you to our fair listeners around the world, or, you know, at least our parents. Hi, Mom.
My parents don't listen to podcasts.
Well, they better.
They should.
We need to get our numbers up.
They need to support the family.
I know, right? But before we get started on our week's discussion, let's delve a little bit into the Eurovision news. Biggest news, you could argue, is a massive changing of the guard over at the EBU. The one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend, Jan Ole Sand, has decided to take a step back from his work at the EBU, the European Broadcasting Union, and no longer retain his title of executive supervisor of the live events. And that includes the Eurovision Song Contest, Junior Eurovision, Eurovision Young Musicians, Young Dancers, Eurovision Choir Competition. And he is returning back to his roots at NRK, Norwegian National Television. 2011, I believe, was his first Eurovision at the helm.
Yeah, so we started together.
I know. I feel like, you know, he's graduating. Or something. So it's going to be a bit of a change of the guard. He will retain his title throughout the 2020 contest in Rotterdam and then pass it over to his...
Undetermined.
Yeah, TBD. So feel free to send in your resumes, I guess, over to the folks at the EBU. Who knows if they'll even take a look. But yeah, y'all know, good luck to you, man. Onwards and upwards.
I can already see the form email that everyone gets. After careful consideration, we decided to move forward with other candidates. Thank you for submitting your resume and wish you the best of luck.
Yeah.
Producing other large international singing competitions in the future.
Yep. Because there are so many events quite like Eurovision.
Kind of.
All right, but we do have other news. Looking forward to the contest itself in 2020. We have our first two artists filling out our roster. It's crazy to think that we are actually filling that out. But yeah, as of the time of recording, we have word from Belgium that Hoover Phonic will be representing them in Rotterdam. And now, Derek, I know that you, in particular, are totally psyched about this. You are a major Hoover Phonic fan. And you have been for quite a while. You actually wrote a really cool article for our friends over at ESC Insight just this week once they made this announcement, just talking about your story with them and how you're feeling. But why don't you say in your own words, what went through your head when I texted you saying, oh my God, Hoover Phonic?
I thought you were messing with me,
no.
Honestly.
Well, I mean, I always am.
You always are. I mean, how many people can say, oh, my favorite band's going to Eurovision? like, ever. It was shocking, and I couldn't believe it. And I feel a little bad because I haven't followed them as much recently. They've had a few artists or lead singers kind of shifting, exploring different options, a lot of different genres and styles, so they've come a long way since I listened to them, but I found them in early 2000s. I think I have like 6 or 7 of their albums. Mm. I used to listen to them constantly. Mm. Absolutely love them. So I'm crazy excited. The article that kind of details all this is called Revelations and Devastations When Your Favorite Band Heads to Eurovision. So I'm just chuffed to bits to see what they come out with, but it doesn't look like we're going to see a song from them for a couple months yet.
Supposedly they have a demo in the works. I think it's February.
Yeah.
So they've got a demo in the works, but they've got plenty of time in order to refine and be as perfectionistic as they want to be about this. So they've got a couple months left.
Yeah. I know Alex, the songwriter behind Senics.
Yeah.
Matter of Time. He had a really interesting interview with Eurovision in Belgium, and he was talking about all of his ideas for staging, and he kind of broke down some of Belgium's other recent acts and what was successful and unsuccessful about them, and kind of where he wanted to see his performance go. And they got complete creative control over the performance of the live show. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they do.
I'm really, really excited to see a seasoned artist like this really take the helm. Because, you know, as great as some of the songs that Belgium sent recently, there have been a lot of artists that have been sort of new on the scene, or this is their first major, major big break. But these folks really seem to know who they are.
Yeah.
And where they're coming from. They have a point of view. Alex was a coach on The Voice of Belgium. So he has a bit of perspective on how things work behind the scenes at major musical reality shows, for lack of a better term. And their current lead singer, Luca, was a contestant on the show. So she's got some cool perspective with that as well. So really, really excited about that.
And they seem like they'd be a really good fit for Eurovision. They have a very sweeping orchestral style that I think works really well kind of in that venue to kind of like sweep you up in it and make just kind of grab you and make you feel like this strong emotional reaction to it. They incorporate a lot of like trip hop and like sort of jazzy or old school kind of funk stuff. They sampled Isaac Hayes in one of their songs, which is kind of cool.
Since the announcement, I've been listening to, there's a song that they did with, before she was half of Madame Monsieur, but they did a song called Bada Boom, which is on one of their recent albums with the lead singer of Madame Monsieur, Emily Satt. That is just this chill, awesome little jam that I could listen to on a loop for hours on end if I wanted to. So yeah, if you wanted to listen to a really cool little primer of what they do, check out Bada Boom.
Oh. Bada Boom's a lot cooler than I remember it. I feel bad. I never actually looked that up when I found out Madame Monsieur was connected to Hooverphonic. I'm like, oh, I should go look that song up, and I never did. And when I finally listened to it, I'm like, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think their big one right now is I'm Not Romantic. Yeah. It's kind of their latest single.
Yeah, Romantic, yeah.
And that's getting some heat on the YouTube. Mm. They're currently on tour around Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like they have a number of dates lined up.
Which I think is great. That way they're kind of getting a little bit of the fan fervor going early.
Yeah, that'll help.
Yeah.
And it sounds like... Yeah, and they've toured quite extensively all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
During the interview, he mentioned doing a show in Tokyo. You know, they're not unfamiliar with flying to crazy places and doing strange venues and interviews.
They're not even going to be flying to crazy places. They literally could just hop a bus to Rotterdam from Brussels. This is a 2-hour car ride between A and B.
Yeah. And the whole thing, but like something we'll get into in this episode is the whole, it's not just you go there and you perform the song and you go home. It's a process. Mm-hmm. It's this whole event. And they seem like they're really comfortable with that whole thing.
Absolutely. Really, really excited to see what comes with this. But it's early days yet. We just have the name, and then we have all of these hopes and extrapolations that we're kind of building on top of. So they are not the only artist whose name we heard for the first time this week in a Eurovision context. We have, surprisingly enough, an announcement from Spain. We knew that they were switching to an internal selection, and there were a whole bunch of names being tossed around, floated around as a rumor. But we have a confirmation as of, I believe, yesterday. Blas Cantó is the name of the singer that has been selected from it. 27-year-old artist, almost 28, from Murcia. Actually has even though he's sort of a newcomer on the scene as a soloist, he's actually been pretty active ever since he was a kid. He was the runner-up for the Junior Eurovision Song Contest pre-selection in 2004, and considering that the person who beat him ended up winning the whole dang Junior Eurovision that year, That's, you know, pretty good pedigree. And then he also came in second place as a member of the band Aurin for the ticket to Düsseldorf for Eurovision 2011 as well, with the songbook Volver. So they were Aurin performed together until, oh, I guess, about the 2015, 2016 or so. And since then, he's been releasing solo work. He was on Tu Cara Me Sueña, which is the Spanish version of Your Face Sounds Familiar, where they have singers dressing up as other singers. And I believe he actually won the whole thing, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, he released his first full album last September, Complicado. He's had a number of singles out in both Spanish and English. So, yeah, so fresh-faced talent with a surprising amount of experience. We'll find out soon enough when his song is going to come out. I'm going to guess it'll probably be another February release, again, so they have time to figure out what demo works, what doesn't. So little by little, we're getting more information and more names added to this crazy dysfunctional family. Sadly, like last podcast, I have the sad news that we are saying goodbye to another member of this crazy family. Karel Gott, who represented Austria back at Eurovision 1968 with Tausend Fenster, even though he was a national of the Czech Republic, passed away just this week at the age of 80. He was an absolutely beloved figure in the Czech and Slovak musical scene. He was voted the country's best male singer in the Czech National Music Awards 41 times, most recently in 2017, so it kind of goes to show how extended of a career he's had. I'm trying to think of who he would be analogous to in an American market, if Sinatra were still kicking. But a big, big, big deal over there. Very, very popular in, of course, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, but also in the German-speaking reaches of Europe, and somehow made it to Eurovision 68 for Austria. So, Karel Gott, we salute you. Godspeed.
Nun trägt schon die Stadt ihr Abendkleid. Ein Lichtermeer in der Dunkelheit.
Let's switch up the mood a little bit. What's Maruv been up to this week?
Oh, our old friend Maruv.
I know. Maruv watch.
Looks like she's been nominated for a MTV Europe Award.
Yeah.
For Best Russian Artist.
Oh, the irony. Oh, the awkward, awkward irony.
Whoops.
Yeah. We still love you, Maruv. Obviously, the Russian music market does too. Who knows, on
November 3rd, we can find out if she wins.
In Seville, yeah. And she wasn't the only one from our Eurovision family who was nominated for an MTV EMA. Mahmoud, second place this year, was nominated for Best Italian Act. Andras Kale Saunders, who represented Hungary in 2014, and also, you know, half American, so we totally claim him, was nominated as Best Hungarian Act. And Roxy Vigo, our winner from Junior Eurovision last year, was nominated for Best Polish Act. She's only like 15 years old, and like the entire country is already getting behind her, so good on her, Roxy. And she'll also be hosting Junior Eurovision in November, so we're going to see a lot more of her soon, and who knows, maybe someday she'll graduate to the big show.
Probably. I mean, it seems like a logical transition.
I think so.
And representing the USA for Best American Artist is Lizzo.
Yeah, Minnesota.
Hometown girl.
Yeah, we love her. We love her. but let's bring this back to you, Derek, because like I said, we normally keep you in your paddock downstairs, give you some hay every once in a while, and make sure that your water is fresh.
People are awful. Please, someone, send help.
We love to shower him with sugar lumps.
Oh, your lovely horse.
We have the kind of friendship that I can give him crap for this.
All right, so, just a quick background about me. Sam got me into this whole mess.
It's all my fault.
About 5 years ago.
Gosh, it's been 5 years.
I've gone to five of these things, and I've never gone with the same organization twice.
Oh my gosh, that's right. You are just a Eurovision Ronin, aren't you?
No. Oh, I like that. Ooh, can I get that on my name badge?
I was about to say, get that on a business card, man.
So Sam introduced me to Glenn, who's our friend from Wales, who's now working for the BBC.
Yeah. Hey, Glenn.
He was actually on the UK delegation this year for Bigger Than Us.
Yeah, he pops up every once in a while. We're happy to see him.
Yeah, he's doing great.
Yeah, he's doing fantastically good on him, working with the BBC. But yeah, for a while he ran a radio show out of the Swansea area called Or Wales 12 points.
Wales 12 points, I was going to say.
And in Austria, so 2015, I already had my accreditation path kind of settled with Insight, as I often do. But it turns out that W12P needed a photojournalist to, you know,
keep it interesting.
Keep it interesting and keep the social media popping.
Yep. Bright and colorful.
You
got to meet Glenn, who just a young radio showman. Shows up and gives me an accred for the press, and I'm running around all over Vienna taking photos of the city and the artists doing press conferences and rehearsals, and it was insane.
Yeah.
We'll get more into that. I guess then the following year, I teamed up with Eurovision Ireland, and we did kind of a cross-promotional thing with ESC Insight. Mm-hmm. So we were back to doing like video interviews again, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was so much fun.
No, that was so much fun. And we'll get more into that in a minute.
No, we're just doing a quick little biography.
Okay.
Like, who the hell is this guy that we have doing? Because normally you're the one doing our production.
Yeah, production and editing.
Yeah, you're our editor. You are the one making sounds half decent.
The learning process. And then the year after that, we joined the Bulgarians.
Yeah.
Which was a hoot.
It really was.
And please come back, guys. You are awesome.
We miss you. We really do. But so both you and I were actually on the same team officially for once. We had the same delegation on our badge.
Yeah. Followed around Christian.
Yeah, Chris Costa.
For a good 2 weeks, man, he's a character.
He really is. You know, can we throw to a little bit of a beautiful mess?
Let's do it.
Yeah. And we don't have a thing to lose, no matter what they say or do. That I'm nothing
more. Our love is untouchable. Any other year, that song would have won.
Yeah. I mean, I don't begrudge Salvador Sobral for winning the Thud.
No. It's that kind of bad timing.
Yeah.
Where it's just like one of the better songs in the last several years. A slightly better song came out that same year.
Yep.
And what do you do?
No, I keep thinking to myself, you know, we had a great song, a great presentation, a committed artist. I like to say that we almost brought a gun to a knife fight. But that year, Portugal brought a bazooka clad in velvet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was no beating that song. It was a juggernaut.
It was stunning. Ugh.
So, I mean, Christian, he's a professional. Yeah, even at his age, he had more stage experience than a lot of the other artists did.
Yeah, three times his age.
And just 24/7, he was on.
Mm-hmm.
He knew how to play the game.
Yeah.
He still does. And it's incredible to be around someone like that. And so positive, too. He wasn't a jerk about it.
No. He was
kind of amazing.
So super, super cool. Like, 17 years old. Like, we found out that our boss is going to be a 17-year-old kid. We had all these images in our head of, oh my gosh, he's going to be, you know, he could be a spoiled brat. He could be an incredible human being.
Yeah.
Luckily, he was the latter.
Yeah.
And he had a great team around him, and we were very, very fortunate to be a little part of that. So
yeah.
So you were doing a lot of photography and social media, and I was doing a lot of the press wrangling and some press release writing, and we made a good team.
It did.
Yeah, until fortunes ripped us apart the next year.
Sadly, it was not to be. For the next year, Sam stuck with Bulgaria, and I ran off and joined...
The Austrian
delegation.
So you were still at least working with friends of the family, considering
Caesar was a backing singer for Christian.
Yeah.
And then he wanted to step into the spotlight and be the singer for Austria. And unfortunately, he didn't do so well. He only came in third.
Oh,
it was,
what
yeah,
an
it was
underachiever.
A real disappointment, I think. Everyone was expecting, of course, that third place is incredible.
It was amazing.
I think, they were shockingly humble about the whole thing. I don't think the word, and I'm not trying to disparage them, they were hoping to qualify. And I think a lot of artists do. And just the general reaction when they won the jury by a decent margin was just shock. They had no idea they'd done as well as they did. And
yeah, I was almost worried that the head of delegation was going to have to change his pants after the jury vote came out. I think everybody was just freaked out about it. Oh my God, are we ready to host this again if they won?
Yeah, it was a serious question for a couple minutes there. And it was really amazing to see someone who he kind of always been a backing singer and kind of always had like a smaller career suddenly step up and be like, no, I'm going for it. I'm going to put myself out there and really show people what I can do and get that kind of respect and that recognition.
Absolutely.
Like he's got a hell of a career ahead of him now.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. And also just in general, a good guy.
Oh yeah, great guy.
Yeah, great guy. So if I ever get in my arm, making you stay. That brings us ahead to
our most recent year.
Yeah, to Tel Aviv.
Back to the press center. Tel Aviv, yeah. So
I was back on ESC Insight, and you were technically...
USA.
Yeah,
US Radio.
US Radio.
Which, I mean, walking around, I think they had to create the little flag icon. for our press badges because they'd never had it before.
Because you don't walk into a Eurovision press center with an American accreditation.
So all the accreditation badges have these little circle, kind of like you'd have on your phone, for all the flags. And here's this American flag. And it was, I'd say the image quality wasn't as good as some of the other flags because they probably hastily threw it together like, oh man, the Americans are here?
Like, oh man.
And I feel bad I never raised my hand at any of the press conferences. And yeah, I'm Derek from US Radio. It's just so they could be like, what are you doing here? US Radio has been broadcasting on outside of Providence for the last couple of years.
Boston area. I mean, it covers that area.
It covers that. The whole Upper East Coast, there's a huge Portuguese population. And they were super interested, obviously, because Portugal had won and they were hosting it. Got massive numbers the year before and wanted to see if they can keep it up. I don't know what's going to happen next year.
TBD?
I'd like to assume that the numbers this year were good enough to keep the show going, because having a U.S. presence would be excellent, I think.
Especially considering, you know, the growth in the U.S. market with it now available on Netflix, with this Will Ferrell project going up. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, it's getting a lot more attention the last couple of years than previously. And I know they tried. Mm-hmm. They brought Justin Timberlake to 2016, hoping to
kick it up a little bit.
And people are like, eh. And then they got Madonna, and they're like, eh. Unfortunately.
Let's go a little bit more into your experience. Like, we've gone through your resume, I guess you could say.
So if anybody's hiring.
But, you know, now that you've been going for, you know, a relatively long time. I mean, you've been going longer than a lot of...
Half a decade,
yeah. Think about it. It's crazy. But what have been some of your favorite songs? What have been some of your musical memories of the contest?
It's strange because back in 2015 when I got the invite, my first experience with Eurovision, my brother did a presentation on Finland for one of his college courses. Sorry, university courses. And and it was like a tourist kind of presentation, like, you know, to drum up more interest in tourism. And he picked Finland for some reason. And Lordi had just recently won Eurovision. So he based his entire presentation around Lordi. And his slogan for Finland was, "Come to Finland and see Lordi." And he had clips from their music videos and songs and all this stuff. And I'm like, who the hell is Lordi? Where did you find this? And he's telling me like, oh yeah, there's a huge like metal community in Finland and all this other stuff. And it's part of this Eurovision Song Contest thing. And I'm like, what's that? What are you talking about? Since then, Eurovision has slowly seeped into it. I know when Conchita won, there was a mention of it in the news and people were kind of referencing it. Still, it's sort of this weird thing that Europeans do. This woman with a beard won this international contest. Like, what's that about? I mean, Americans, you know, open-minded and interested in different cultures we are. I know. But it, you know, it started to open up the door a bit. And through your tutelage, we started watching older contests.
Tutelage, indoctrination. What do they call that technique in a Clockwork Orange where... They keep the guy's eyes. It was Levodico technique.
Yes.
That was basically our relationship for... Yeah.
Scratched my retinas up pretty bad, too, just like Malcolm McDowell. Anyway, suddenly this thing that opens up to you, and it's like this really cool, amazing thing. And, you know, I'm fascinated by other cultures. I love to travel and learn about music, and it's weird. I like Danny always says, I like the weirdness. And for me, and this kind of contrast with Hooverphonic, it's an opportunity to discover new music. I mean... Let's face it, if this contest didn't exist, a lot of these artists would never be heard of outside of their own country. Even the big, like Netta, might never have gotten outside of Israel.
Yeah, she might still be a wedding singer, you know?
Yeah.
Plinking away at her mixer box, yeah.
And, or even like Gabani?
Yeah.
Outside of Italy. And
maybe
like
the Swiss.
You know? The Swiss, yeah. And you just kind of wonder what career path they would have had. Just hoping somebody from another country would hear it on the radio and think, hey, let's play this in Germany or... Or in Bosnia or something.
Right.
So it's fascinating in that regard. And then every person has this elaborate history. And I know we've talked about this before, but an American contest, like talent shows, are so focused on the human story. Mm. And with Eurovision, the focus is on the song and creating a human story on stage.
Right.
That's more of a narrative.
You have 3 minutes to do it. Yeah.
You have to sell everything in 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's so concentrated.
And it's fascinating to watch someone, all these people come together and throw something together for a 3-minute show. That's got to get your attention. You're making a short, live, recorded film, music video that has to impress 200 million people. You got 3 minutes to do it. Go.
Oh, man.
Like,
when you think about it that way.
When you think about it this way.
And, so intense.
And being on the ground and watching it all come together. I swear every single year when you're watching everyone rehearse and you're watching them practice and you're watching all the different people doing all their things, you're thinking, this is never going to come together. This is not going to happen. It's just, it's such a huge machine with so many moving parts. You can't help but think it's like something's going to fall apart and everything's going to be a disaster. And then it works. Like if you're watching at home, the live show on the night, you think it's a well-oiled machine. Everything's perfect.
There's a lot of WD-40 that goes on in this.
Yeah, kind of incredible.
Yeah.
The night of when they play that little stinger at the beginning.
The Te Deum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then everyone looks great. Everyone's on their marks. Everyone's hitting the notes the best they can.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's hair is perfect.
Everyone's hair is perfect.
Yeah. Kind of jealous.
They have spent thousands of dollars.
They do. But imagine. I mean, all of this investment, all of this time, this energy, this money for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's incredible to think. So what have been some of the 3 minute moments, that have grabbed you over the years?
Just this year, Hatari really got me. And we can discuss the merits of that. I think the most fascinating thing about it was they played the game better than I think anyone I've ever seen.
Mm.
In terms of like social media and anticipation, people on the ground were afraid of what they were going to do because they were so controversial. And I'm thinking, they're a band. What could they possibly do that you are worried about? But that was just this mystique they had.
Mm.
And other artists have tried, I think, to do that, but just never to the same degree.
Yeah, I mean, they created the narrative in more than just the 3 minutes. It was the buildup. It was the interview process, which they were absolute masters of behind the scenes. I've never seen people so engaged at watching somebody else's press conference in anyone that I've been to, with the exception of Jedward, possibly, but that was a very, very different reason why. It was more, oh dear God, what are they wearing? How many times are they going to jump up onto the tables and dance all over the place? Mm. Rather than, I'm fascinated by what these guys are going to say and do, and I'm on the edge of my seat for what I'm about to witness, rather than just the weirdness of potential, you know.
Mm. And it had almost a, this is a really strange reference, but like a Salman Rushdie Satanic Verses kind of thing, where the story itself was fine. It was like the Satanic Verses was a good book that had like these controversial elements that just got blown out of proportion by everything around it. And Salman Rushdie will tell this story, like these like fundamentalist, like former fundamentalist religious people come up and say, yeah, I finally got around to reading your book and I don't see what the big deal is. And his response is always, you're the big deal. You did this. And it's kind of almost the same thing. Like, yeah, the song is edgy, but if you sit down and listen to it, it's like, well, it's really not saying anything you disagree with.
Right, exactly.
That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
And like kind of going back to Christian, he was phenomenally good at social media.
Oh, yeah.
And he had his phone in his hand all the time, and he was always posting, always thinking about Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and
everything.
He was finding other celebrities he could get pictures with.
Mm-hmm.
And some actress who happened to be in Bulgaria filming a movie.
Oh, yes.
Who was like the biggest Instagram, one of the bigger Instagram people, and he contacted her and said, hey, we should meet up and do some pictures for Instagram, like on his own.
Yeah.
Just,
I mean, he's always been a very independent person. So, I mean, for him to kind of take the narrative into his own hands, that is such an underrated part of the game as a whole. I never would have equated Chris and Hatari in the same breath, but now that you mention it, no, it's absolutely true.
And that's something that's kind of a conversation that comes up a lot in the press center too, is which artist do we think is going to win, even if they have a phenomenally good song? Are they getting the buzz outside of the show? Are people already talking about it well enough in advance?
Mm.
And we've had 2 years in a row now where the song that won had this massive advance conversation going on.
Yeah.
Like, they were number one in the betting odds for months prior to the contest, and then they ended up winning.
Right, which is interesting considering that when Netta had that, she also had the added element of the song is a little weird.
Hmm.
It's a little off the wall. You know, she has a style that is incredibly unique.
Hmm.
And then contrast that with Duncan Lawrence and Arcade, which is so subtle and so quiet and so understated. And you can kind of say the same about Amar Pelos Dois as well, which didn't necessarily have as much of a massive push as Occidentalis Karma or even Beautiful Mess in 2017. but there was always the undercurrent with him of his health. I hate to bring it down to that, but
that was a huge
but it became part of the story.
Became part of the story, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the story. Yeah. The human element behind it,
I think he personally was a bit miffed that was becoming part of the story, but he tried to keep it as quiet as possible. But yeah. When he wasn't able to show up for the first week of rehearsals because his doctors didn't want him
out of the country. Yeah. There's no escaping us to a certain degree. I mean, if you've got that much momentum, mm-hmm. people start asking questions. Yeah. And the same thing happened to Gamani when he brought a monkey out on stage and everybody kept asking about the monkey. He just didn't want to talk about it anymore.
Right. So he kind of lost the game a little bit by doing that, yeah.
Yeah, it was really sad meeting him. We did Christian and him did a recording. And you could tell he just wanted to go home. And I remember leaving that interview thinking, oh man, the poor guy.
Yeah. But when people were doing interviews with Gamani and they made sure to ask questions other than,
oh, yeah.
So what's the monkey about? What's the monkey about? What's the monkey about? You know, our friends over at ESC Insight did a really great one where they were asking questions as deep as the linguistics of it. You know, how, the idea of translating the act into English, how would that even work? The idea of these images of Eastern mythology, Eastern spiritualism in coming from a country that is very highly Catholic. You know, how does he contrast with that? And he was incredibly engaged. And coming up with a really fantastic, but that's because they were asking
the right questions.
And as somebody who worked on the press side and got to witness a lot of these interviews with artists that I was helping represent, and having been on both sides of this, really, try to go into these interviews and ask interesting, different questions. And it can be hard. It can really be hard. Go in there. Don't be afraid to be weird.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these people, they're passionate about music. They're
absolutely.
Obviously all very passionate about it. They wouldn't be there if they weren't.
Right, exactly.
And you ask them the right question, and you see them light up when they get this opportunity. And and that's sort of a sad thing about the press center, is they want quick, and that's just the nature of news.
Yeah.
They need quick Twitter soundbite little notes to say, oh yeah, this, here's this clever question. But then every now and again, somebody just kind of give this look on their face when somebody asks them a question. Let's be like, yeah, next. Moving on, next question.
That happened at the press conference after the semifinal this year, and everybody was exhausted after the first semifinal in Tel Aviv, and somebody asked a question, and it was just kind of apropos of nothing. It wasn't a particularly deep or incisive question, and I think it was the pair from Slovenia.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was Zalan Yashar.
They just didn't want to bother with it.
And it was like 2:00 in the morning. Everybody's exhausted, both physically and emotionally. It's been a long night, and it was like, no. And at that point, it was done. It was,
Yeah, they basically ended the press conference. They said, yeah, well, I don't want to answer that. Can we go now?
And then somebody else stood up.
And I think every other artist on that table was like trying to be diplomatic and nice, and they just like weren't having it. And
good on them, because honesty is vital.
You want to be provocative as a press person. I mean, you want to get interesting information out of people, and that's part of the story too, is you're selling your business in a way as well. You need interesting people, interesting answers, interesting stories to tell, and sometimes it's hard to do. I mean, sometimes, not to disparage anyone, these are perfectly nice people. Maybe they just have perfectly normal lives. I grew up in a city with a family, and I like music. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you say about them?
Right.
I know Katarin Duska. She's a lovely woman. We had a great interview with her. Met her a couple of times.
Yeah, lovely.
Every press conference we went there, just kind of a normal life.
Like, she would be the person I'd want to be friends with.
She seemed amazing. But every time we dug into her, there was we kept thinking, oh, there's got to be something salacious in here or something we can really sell. It's like, no, she just likes music and she makes music.
Yeah.
And she's a good singer. That's it.
Yeah. She's got a cool point of view and great history and, balancing Canada and Greece. But there's no, you don't have to be salacious.
No.
But it makes it tougher to market.
Yeah.
Which is kind of...
It comes down to that 3 minutes. Like, how are you going to distinguish yourself for 3 minutes?
Right.
Like, Hatari had that in spades, and there's no fighting it. And then Greece had a great song, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorites last year, too.
Unfortunately, just didn't connect.
It's not, because she's a bad singer or a bad performer or anything like that. It's just, what captures people's attention. So what was the first song that you heard, Derek, that made you think... beyond just Lordy's Hard Rock Hallelujah.
Oh, that really kind of connected.
That really kind of said, ooh.
That one.
I mean.
Oh, yeah. And I know you told me about Delhi was yours.
Yeah.
And it really, I think you told me about that before I really found my own. And I was like, oh, there's got to be a song in here that it's going to really get my attention.
Mm.
And the odd thing is, it was the song Should Have Known Better from Denmark.
Oh, Selena Sameh in 2012.
Yeah. Oh, she's so good. Anyway.
Which is a highly underrated song.
It is highly underrated. I, you know, retrospect. I think she tried to do something a little bit more low-key with her staging, and I think she could have played it up more.
Mm.
And, you know, this isn't a staging discussion question, but it's a song I still listen to all the time, and I still really adore it. And it connected with me in a way that maybe she didn't intend, but the narrative of the song was something, you know, feeling disconnected from somebody, being physically far away from them. There's a lot of lyrics in the song that talk about, like, living out of a suitcase and being somewhere else and not paying attention to the people you care about. I lived overseas for some time.
Yeah.
And I connected to that immediately. And it affected me, like, kind of deeply. And I was just like, oh, God, this song. And every now and again, I'll come on my playlist and I'm like, I can't listen to this right now. I don't want to be sad.
She said, should have known better. Now I miss you. Thanks a lot.
It's amazing that a song that, you know, unfortunately the song didn't do incredibly well on the night. It was, you know, sort of near the bottom of the table. It made it to the finals, which is great.
Yeah.
But for some people, it just kind of passed them by.
Hmm.
And yet for you, this is something that it's like hitting a tuning fork and putting it like directly on your skull. Like it just rings and resonates with you so deeply. And it's just incredible to see something that could be subtle for one person could be so, so vibrant and so, so emotionally conductive to you.
And it's and everyone has different taste,
I'll
admit. And it's weird sometimes when everybody's on board for a song and I'm not.
In that case, you kind of want to fight even harder for it.
I want to fight harder for it.
I know you well enough to know that you wouldn't just say, you know, like, oh, I know everybody else likes it.
Everybody else likes it. It's
I'm
okay.
Just
going to
be quiet.
But
own it.
At the same time, I'm never going to tell someone you can't like it either. I don't want to write an article that says this song is terrible and you should think so too.
No. And unfortunately, you know, that can exist quite a fair amount in the fandom. In any fandom, really.
Yeah.
There will always be somebody who's going to try to harsh your squee and yuck your yum. But, you know, own it.
Yuck your yum.
I mean, own it.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are songs that I've absolutely loved over the years that have been either I knew they would be weird as hell or I knew that they wouldn't, you know, do well on a scoreboard. And there are people, you know, songs that I've absolutely loved and that people who I care very much about would be like, why the hell do you like... Like, my mother, for example. Like, I normally take her as sort of an arbiter of good taste, I guess is one way to do it. But I trust her opinion, especially when it comes to Eurovision. She's normally pretty good at picking out a winner, actually, with the exception of 2016.
Huh.
I knew from the moment I heard 1944 that that was going to be there or thereabouts.
Oh, yeah, we both watched it.
Yeah.
On the night, and we looked at each other like, this is it.
This is it.
This is like, the winner right
she
here.
She hit that whistle tone at the end. I'm like, oh, can we just play a little clip in 1940?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh. Where's your heart? Commanded to rise. I think you're good. And everyone dies. Don't swallow my soul. Our souls. When I played the song for my mom, and when she watched the show the night of, she just didn't connect with it. And which is fine, it's not for everybody. But like, she didn't like the vocal quality, she didn't, you know, she understood the gravity of the message, she just didn't necessarily think it was the right fit for a contest like Eurovision, you know, what have you. Everybody likes different things. But it didn't dull my love for what she was doing. Her national final song from 2011, Smile, I think is freaking adorable. You hate it.
Hate it. I don't think it really showcases her talent the same way, but it's
very diplomatic of you.
Not for me. I don't think it's bad. I think it's very catchy and it's fun. I just, I'm like, eh, it's not doing anything for me. 1944, though, you in her national final, you saw her go out on stage and perform it, and you can just see the look on her face. Like, it was, I think we compared it to Schindler's List. It just had this gravity to it.
Yeah, you knew that you were seeing something.
Yeah.
Like there's no adjective, it's just...
And, I mean, does that translate to votes? Not necessarily, but this one, I think it really came together in every way. She sang it perfectly. Mm-hmm. The staging was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It really told a story visually.
Mm-hmm.
She carried it, like the weight of it, and sold it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Same way Duncan Lawrence did. Like, you could see this weight on him, like this emotional weight. And Netta had this quirky joy about her. Like, and that... and that's a huge thing, is seeing them and seeing them being able to sell it.
Yeah.
Can they, like, that's sort of a criticism when they're on stage, when they're, are they just looking at the camera, or are they engaging with the audience too?
That's absolutely vital.
I would like to think there's a short list of things you can tell someone, like, okay, you're going to Eurovision, you're this artist, here's what you gotta do. And there's some things you can say that just sort of seem obvious. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you gotta look at the camera and you gotta be engaging and you have to sing it well. And then there's all these other things that we don't know, right, that somehow you know it when you see it. Eric, I know, is trying to get into this. He wants to get press accreditation. Mm-hmm. He's working with the radio station out of Mankato.
Yep.
He should be able to get sponsorship, I think. Listener number, isn't that?
I think it's a pretty... I don't want to jinx anything,
no,
but he has a plan, and the rest is up to the kind folks at the European Broadcasting Union of whether they will bestow upon him.
Yes.
So I'll be lighting my candles.
Yeah. It's the getting in is such a crapshoot, it seems like. Every year, the numbers are fewer than what people want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Competition is kind of fierce.
Yeah.
You really have to prove yourself. And
now that more people, especially outside of Europe, are getting into Eurovision, there's going to be more media outlets that are trying to get in.
Yeah, and it's, and they can be choosy.
They can be.
Which is
tough.
Really unfortunate, but it's just, it shows the contest is getting popular and more people are interested in covering it. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing, I guess.
Absolutely. So yeah, you've had quite a depth and breadth of experiences for an American.
For an American who just heard about this 6 years ago or so.
I know, right? You've grown so much.
Shaped and molded by your hands.
No, you're making me sound like some sort of strange Pygmalion thing that's going on.
Pygmalion. Here we are. Okay, so looking forward to 2020.
I know, so excited.
We have two artists.
Mm-hmm.
Hoping Spain does better than 20 this year.
I think Spain are hoping the same thing.
I'm sure every year they hope that.
I know. When they get it right, they get it so, so right. But when they don't, they just miss the mark and it just doesn't work.
Yeah. And Belgium, high hopes for Belgium, obviously. Love Hoover Phonic, but also, I've loved a lot of what Belgium's been doing lately.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, they have it in it to win. They just, like Italy, I think they just keep scratching the surface and not quite getting
it. They've had a handful of fourth place finishes over the last couple of years. And again, folks, if you have a chance, check out Derek's article on ESCinsight.com, The Revelation and the Devastation Awaiting Hoover Phonics Fans. You can just feel the joy. Like, you're such a fanboy. It's kind of cute.
I never thought this would happen. Like, ever since we started doing this, I'm like, I'm never going to know who any of these people are. Except Engelbert Humperdinck. I was a fan of his, but no, I'm just kidding.
Dude.
At least I recognize the name.
True. I mean, Bonnie Tyler. You know,
Bonnie Tyler, I guess I'd heard of.
She was lovely.
And Blue, just because of Love, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, we have got a bit of time before Eric and Danny come back from their trip. I am sure that they are going to have so many amazing stories and hopefully some delicious souvenirs for us because, I want more snacks.
Bring us chocolate.
Yes.
And Stroopwafels.
Ooh, maybe some cheese.
Oh, we got to get some cheese from them. They got those little Havartis at the store covered in wax so we can bring them into the States.
I'm so hungry.
Okay.
All right, let's wrap this up so we can get something to eat.
All right.
Again, you can find us on social media at both Twitter or Facebook at 12points USA. Hit us up on email directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Hit me up directly on Twitter at ESC Insider. I'd love to hear from you. But until then, I've been Sam.
And I've been Derek for a change.
Hey, America.
Stop listening now.